Welcome to Conversations with Leaders on Tremendous Life Radio, providing some of today's most influential and inspiring leaders a platform to share their stories of growing up, what happened, and what they're doing today. Now, here's your host, Todd Weaver.
Hey, welcome everybody to Tremendous Life Radio. We have an excellent, inspiring, and exciting guest for us tonight. We have Mr. Tim Rode. Tim is a retired leader in real estate sales, founder and partner in the mastermind adventure travel business called GoBundance, and is the founder of One Life Fully Lived, engaging and supporting people to dream, plan, and live their best lives. Tim, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome to Tremendous Life Radio.
Hey, it's my honor to be on with you, Todd. I can't wait to see where this takes us.
Hey, I can't wait either, man. We love it. So let's get started right away, please, Tim. Tell us about some of your early memories growing up. What was going on with you as early as you can remember?
Okay. Well, I grew up the third child in a blue-collar family in a blue-collar town called Portola, California. My dad was an elementary school math teacher. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. And I candidly, vividly remember my dad as a child, like the third of every month, he'd say, "Look, I only have $12 for the rest of the month." And it was the third. And I remember one time I was 10 years old. I lost, they bought me a new pair of tennis shoes in Reno, Nevada, and I took those new tennis shoes down to the river. My old ones, the toes had grown out of them. They had holes in them, and I just totally grown out of them age-wise and youth-wise. And so they bought me this new pair, and some smart aleck kid threw one of the shoes down the river, Truckee River in Reno. And I vividly remember seeing that shoe float down the river and knowing for the next month I was going to have to wear those smelly, stinky, holy shoes for another month. And I just remember thinking, man, this is no way to live. I don't want to live like this. And then candidly, things got worse. My parents split up. My mom moved down to Oakland. My dad stayed in Portola. And I kind of bounced back and forth through all my teen years, never really had any kind of foundation. I moved 30 times by the time I was 30 years old. And I was a late bloomer. I barely graduated high school, never went to college. And at 24, I found myself painting addresses on people's curbs to buy diapers for my two small kids because I was a part-time grocery clerk and couldn't get enough hours.
I got to ask you a question. Sorry to interrupt you, but I got to ask you a question. I don't want to let you out of your childhood so quickly, okay? It's wild. It's wild that when I ask you that very first question, that imprinted, you remember that shoe floating down that river, man. And it's just interesting to me that you would remember that when I ask you that question, because you said all that moving 30 times, the third of three children. I mean, what's it like moving when you're trying to grow up and, you know, fit in and find yourself and, you know, become who you believe you are? I mean, what was that like?
It candidly took a long time to connect the dots for me because by the way, I want to back up. Both my parents instilled a strong work ethic and were just intelligent, industrious people. And candidly got a little sidetracked in their lives and it affected all of us through the divorce. So it took a while for the lock to click, right? To figure out who the heck I am and what my life's all about. So I really got off to a slow start. I was candidly a goober in high school. I didn't know where I fit in, especially I live with my dad my freshman year, my mom my sophomore year, my dad my junior year, and then I went and lived with my aunt and uncle down in San Francisco my senior year, and really was bouncing all over the place trying to figure out who the heck I am. Sports helped me a lot, but I was kind of a lost soul, to be honest with you.
Well, and, you know, thanks for that, and thanks for being candid, because it impacts us so much when I listen to these stories, and just to see that you know, that bouncing back and forth, because, and we're going to get to this, I'm sure, about what you do today and the kind of value you bring to other people and encourage people and teach people. But, you know, through those years, you getting kind of, I don't know, for lack of a better term, passed back and forth. I mean, what does that do to a person's kind of, you know, self-esteem and trust? And that, I mean, we could do a whole show on just one of those topics.
Yeah. Well, I think through it all, I always had a strong belief in myself, and I always had a happy-go-lucky spirit. I always have a song in my head, literally a song in my head, and it's usually a pretty darn happy song. So no matter what was going on, you know, that saying, wherever you are, there you go, I kind of like myself. And I like my sense of humor, and whatever I've done, I didn't take myself too serious, and I took whatever I've been doing very serious, but I've always had a great ability to laugh at who I am and my foibles. I know I'm very, very human, and I get a kick out of what a doofus I am in some ways. So, and the people that know me that listen to this will be laughing right now because they know it's true. So,
hey, well, it's cool that you say that. I mean, you say that just hands down. So, I mean, I believe you're real blessed, and that's a gift to have that through any kind of growing up or pain or growing pains or those kind of things. So it's cool that you mentioned that you kind of always had that inside of you. Now, I interrupted you when you were at the painting numbers on the curbs in front of houses.
Yeah.
To earn some extra
money. So my really mom had been in real estate, and here's a good lesson right here. My mom had been in real estate since the 70s. I actually went and saw people like Wayne Dyer back in 75 and Tommy Hopkins, old sales trainer of back in the 70s. And I was putting flyers out for her when I was like 18 years old. So I got a taste of real estate. And she paid for my license at 18 for me to take the test for my license. I didn't pass. My dad paid for it about 21. I didn't pass. When I was 24, working graveyard shifts, throwing freight in the grocery store and painting addresses on people's curbs to buy diapers for my kids, you know, I took the license somewhere, found the time in between those things, and passed. And then I had my real estate license at 24, started selling at 25. I found my calling. You know how when you find out who you are and you find the right product for what your personality is. And that's what real estate was for me, because I love investing. I always loved the game Monopoly. When I'd go back and forth from my mom to dad's, from Oakland, California to Portola, California, I was always fascinated by the path of growth and what's getting built here. And real estate game just always fascinated me. So I started from the grocery line talking real estate to people. There was a guy named Steve Reed in Manteca, California. I referred about 10 deals to him in 1 year and did the math and went, wait a minute, if I just did those 10 deals, I'd make as much as I'm doing here. So I got my license. I quit the grocery business and started in real estate, sold 3 homes my first weekend. I held an open home, sold it, listed their home, and took some buyers out and sold their home. And I remember sitting in the bathtub about 1 a.m. in the morning trying to calm my heart down, because I knew I had found my niche. And I knew finally this, you know, kind of up to that point, way crooked path was about to take a straight line, because I could just do the math and see, man, I'm good at this. I like this. All the in the grocery business, I worked for a company called Save Mart. They talked about sunshine service. And when I threw freight, I was the whammer jammer. I threw a lot of freight. Whatever I did, I worked really hard at. I remember a union rep coming up to me at one store, saw me throwing freight one day, first day at a new store, and came up to me and said, dude, we don't work at this pace. You got to slow down. And I said, look, I'm here for 8 hours. It's my workout. I work hard. And you guys go at your pace, but don't ever tell me that again. And that's just the kind of, you know, I just a go-getter by nature. And so after that first weekend, I just saw it is on. And there was a song called, I don't know if you know the song, Welcome to the Jungle by Guns N' Roses. It's kind of loud rock. Da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. And And I played that 7 a.m. every morning on my way to work. And it was just kind of like my theme song to start the day. And I was very, very motivated. I sold 2,500 homes over the next 18 years. And that's quite a bit of real estate. And what I did different from most is I still lived like I was a grocery clerk. And that's a key piece of what most people miss in trying to, quote, get somewhere in life is while my income went from, you know, $30,000 a year to $60,000 to $90,000 to big numbers, what I see most people do is as their income soars, their expenses go along with it. And I was able to have the presence of mind to keep my expenses low. And something told me you're just destined to do something bigger later in life. Just get this money game over with. So it's kind of like I was on a mission. From 25 to 40, it was the, you know, put the oxygen mask on myself and get to a place where I'm in a financial position where my I just don't have to worry anymore about that piece of the puzzle of that piece of the pie of life. So from 25 to 40, I sold 2,500 homes. I lived within my means. I invested very wisely. I learned the investment game really well, intensely. And I looked at it like that was my real job. And don't get me wrong, in selling all the real estate I sold, we were never sued in selling 2,500 homes. I was a fierce advocate for my clients. I took that Save Mart supermarket sunshine service. That was my motto in my mind, and I was delivering sunshine service. I wanted to come through for my customers, do the best job I could for them, work as efficiently as I could, spend as much time with my kids and my family, and put everything I have to do with them in my daytimer, so I never missed a parent-teacher conference. I coached the kids in Little League. I enjoyed all of the balance things while I did this. I'm really, really proud of that piece of the whole puzzle.
And I believe you should be, Tim. And listen to you. Thank you. And listen to you describe those 15 years. It interests me. During that time, it seems like you had some sort of internal accountability partner or some sort of not only the drive, but I mean, were you reading a lot of books then? Were you doing any personal motivation? Were you searching out? Were you seeking out counsel? Did you have mentors, or did you just kind of somehow intuitively know what to do?
No, a couple of things. By the way, that's a really good question, Todd. First of all, I had in my mind, when you're self-employed, you can work your own hours. There's no one really telling you you have to do this. So you know how you have that committee in your head? I had a boss, you know, in that committee, and he was the executive director of Tim Road. And candidly, he was a jerk. He was a tough boss. And whenever I didn't want to prospect and whenever I didn't want to do the dollar productive activities in real estate that lead to your making a lot of sales, he just didn't take no for an answer and just said, you know, you can whine all you want, but you're doing it anyway, basically. And I had a sign over my desk that said, step right up and risk rejection. And that was my mindset. And my thought process is no one's going to take better care of each one of those customers than I will. So how dare I not to get in front of as many of them as possible and let them know how bad they need my services, because I didn't want them to go with anybody else and get less service than what we were going to provide. And I built up a team over years. But to answer your question, I told you I barely graduated high school. I never went to college, but I'm a firm believer in self-education, and that's one of the things in the communities that I'm a part of now is a major piece of what we are all about. But it's lifelong learning, and I figure somewhere between $75,000 and $125,000 on my continuing education, probably closer to the $125,000. And that's anything from Jim Rohn. I've gone through Tony Robbins' Life Mastery. I was on Mike Ferry and Howard Brenton top producer panels. I've been a part of various mastermind groups for decades and always learned from others how to do it. Why reinvent the wheel? Why not learn from somebody else? Really quick story. A year after I got in the business, I went to a Mike Ferry seminar conference down in Palm Desert, and I was the number one agent in all of Manteca after 1 year. And boy, I just thought I was hot stuff. And I went down to this conference, and I had sold 39 homes and probably made $112,000 or some number like that. So I just thinking, boy, are they going to see something in Tim Road? And I talked to the person to the left of me, and they had sold 250 homes. And I talked to the person to the right of me, and they had netted $600,000 that year. And I just went, wow, Tim, you are way out of your element. You are not the hotshot here. You are the small fish. You are going to sit down, shut up, take lots of notes. You're going to stay up all night talking to as many of these people who will let you pick their brains as possible. And I've just always been a sponge for learning and seeing how other people do. And I think you and I are both kindred souls in just living in curiosity and having a child's curiosity, if you will, towards mastering life. So not just how to sell, how to invest, through different periods. I've gone off on tangents on how to learn how to become a expert backcountry skier, and with all the avalanche awareness and back wilderness survival and stuff like that. I've just always been very fascinated with learning whatever it is I'm into. I want to be really good at it.
Well, and you know, thanks. That's why I ask those kind of questions, because I believe, you know, listening to other people's experience, it just brings huge value and wonderful lessons to us. And some of the lessons you've already shared with us are like maybe invaluable. I don't even know how valuable they may be to anybody that applies any of that. The other thing I heard you talk about in the fiscal, the financial, was that through those 15 years, you intuitively knew, or you learned, or maybe from listening to other successful people, that you don't spend more than you have. Boy, that's a big deal in this day and age, and even back then, not so long ago, correct? I really appreciate that. And where did that come from? You just know that, or did that come from Larry Winget or somebody you read or heard? Do you even remember?
A lot of the books I read, like The Millionaire Next Door, my best book, I think, is my Bible, is The Richest Man in Babylon. Taught a lot of great money instincts. I personally break it down to as simple as ABC, and I say most people don't know, and whoever's listening to this, I want you to check yourself. Do you know your ABCs? A is what income is coming in from all sources. B is what does it cost you a month to live off that income? And that includes all your expenses, your trips, your groceries, you know, everything it costs to live, including taxes. And C is what's left for, unfortunately, many, debt reduction or hopefully left to invest. So that ABC formula is something I find most, and it breaks my heart in real estate. Quick little story. In 2007, my good friend Pat Hyben, who wrote a book called The Six Steps to Seven Figures, and David Osborne, who's a big leader with Keller Williams Real Estate, we were at a Keller Williams Real Estate seminar. It's called their family reunion. And I hadn't been to any real estate thing since I retired from selling real estate in 2000. And I ran into a lot of people. We used to be on the Mike Ferry and Howard Brenton panels back in the 90s. And some of them were making over $1 million a year. And I saw them in 2007. I was like, hey, buddy, how you doing? How's things? And a lot of them looked ashen. They were white as a ghost. And the downturn had taken them down, because they didn't follow those ABCs. As their A, income climbed, B, their expenses went right along with them, and when the circumstances changed, they got wiped out. And it was just heartbreaking to see some real legends of real estate devastated financially. So, you never know what's going to happen macroly, what's going to happen with the economy outside that you can't control, but what you can control is your own finances. And I hope your listeners are well in tune with their ABCs of their own finances.
Hey, thank you for that so much. I mean, really big, big value with what you're sharing with us. We really appreciate it, Tim. And that's not theory in your life. You saw it. You just described it. It's fact. And we really appreciate you sharing that with us. Now,
sure.
Let's get to that. You're getting to, maybe you didn't know it or not. You can describe it. You're getting kind of to the end of your real estate sales career. What's going on with you at that point near the end of the 15 years? Did you know?
Well, a couple things happened. Yeah. First of all, I want to talk about a down period. The market had taken a downturn just like 2006 to 2008. In 1997, the real estate market had taken a downturn. And candidly, I was in a rough place. We were barely breaking even on our real estate business and what our rentals were bringing in and stuff. And I had a really rough period. And if you've ever had one of those periods where you're mad as heck and you're not going to take it anymore, that's what I had. And it was a real low point. And I just looked up and I was candidly a little overweight and not taking care of myself physically. And the just real estate stuff was just in a lull. And I was living in the Central Valley of California, and both my wife and I are mountain people. And so we both had for a long time wanted to get out of the valley and just couldn't see a way to do it. And in the depths of a downturn, I wrote, I called it my dream. And it was a 10-year vision plan for where my life was. I was around 40 years old, and at 50, I wanted to be living in the mountains, retired with enough passive income to pay for the party, basically. And I wanted to be what I call getting the goods in the woods on a daily basis, get plenty of time for my friends and family, and to find a way to give back and to help make the world a better place. And I wrote my dream, and on the top right-hand corner, there's a handwritten dream. In the top right-hand corner, I wrote, "Dream on, dream until your dreams come true, Aerosmith, 1975. I told you, I've always had a song in my head. The Guns N' Roses song helped me when I was selling. I always write in my journal with a theme song at the end of what I write in the journal and stuff. And music's played a big part of my life. But in that dream, I just told you what I saw is we'd be living in the mountains. And right now, Todd, I'm looking out at just the most inspiring mountain view. And there's you know, clouds and snow-capped peaks in the distance. And I live on a mountain. I literally walk around it all day, you know, just living the dream I made in 1997. So our motto for our nonprofit is Dream It, Plan It, Live It. And it all starts with a dream. And I wrote my own dream in 1997. We wrote a plan for that dream. It's great to have a dream, but you need a written plan to follow through on that dream. And then you need a community of people holding you accountable and know what your dream is and want to see you get it. That's how great things happen. And that's kind of where this is all taken. So in 97, I wrote that dream. In 2000, I quit selling real estate kind of on a whim, candidly, because I'd started flipping homes and I was doing well with that. And then I just started on down that road.
Well, that's wild. And I'm glad you said about writing down the dream. I mean, again, real, real pertinent information to moving forward for any of the listeners through your own experience. Writing down the dream. And then writing down the plan and then showing up, of course. I didn't hear you say that, but showing up in your own life and in your own dream. I don't want, you know, sometimes I think we read things or, you know, especially in this day and age where we all want maximum results with minimum effort, you know. It's not like you just wrote down the dream and then sat back and waited for the law of attraction to provide it all, correct?
That's funny because when you said that, I was thinking of The Secret. And how I think a lot of people just think if they put it out there to the, you know, to the gods and really want it, that it's all going to happen. And desire is just a small part in the whole picture. I think you'd agree.
You know, Charlotte Tremendous Jones always said, it'll be the same 5 years from now as you are today, except for two things, the people you meet and the books you read. And that third part is what you talked about. To allowing yourself to be surrounded by other like-minded people that are holding you accountable and want you to succeed. I heard you say that as well, correct?
Yeah, that's always been a big part of my life, is the accountability piece, is having, you know, accountability partners and writing out my own, you know, like a long-term vision, and then a one-year plan, a monthly plan, a weekly plan. What am I going to get done today? And just figuring out the five things I need to do today. If I do these, I'll get done what I need to do this week, which will get me this month, which will get me this year, which gets me towards my long-term outcome. And, of course, things change, you know. The plan I wrote in 1997 is not exactly how I expected things to go, but it's all been just incredible, and it's all worked out far better than I ever dreamed of back then.
Well, take us through that then. As you retired kind of on a whim, you said, in 2000, what was your focus? Did you know what you wanted to do next? Did you know how you were going to...
I didn't know. I didn't have clearly the long-term outcome of where I am now, but I knew I needed to take a lot of time off to plan something that was going to be pretty darn cool. And I knew it had, like in that dream in 1997, I had written, this is what we were going to do, is I was going to retire and start a business in the mountains. It was based around adventure, where Tina would make sandwiches and have coffee for people, and I'd have them go up to the top of a mountain and ride bikes with them all day and just talk about life. And when we were on our honeymoon in Jamaica, they had the Blue Mountain bike ride. And that kind of is where we saw that in 1992. So I put that in the dream. So I knew I'm an adventurous soul. I love the outdoors. I'm a pretty fit athlete, especially for 55. Most people in their 30s, that's where I am, is I'm in my 20s or 30s physically. So I love to get the goods in the woods. So back then, I knew I didn't want to work hard anymore. I had just flipped a home and made a nice profit off it. And I said, you know, I'm just going to do more of this. So I turned my team into a flipping machine. And from 2000 to 2005, we flipped about 50 homes, about 10 a year. So all I tried to do is buy one home a month. I worked about 10 hours a month, and I spent a lot of time in the boonies, at the ocean, visiting friends, just walking with my wife and talking about what's important and where are we going and where's all this heading to, and then in 2005 we moved to the mountains. I wrote my 10-year plan in 1997. In 2005 we sold out right at the height of the California real estate craze. I had accumulated 17 properties with 52 tenants. And we exchanged and or sold all of those. I built what they call the castle in the sky at a place called Grizzly Ranch in my little blue-collar hometown. I came back home. I live on this fantastic mountain that I just walk around with my dogs all day and balance on logs and do chin-ups on tree branches and stuff. And live an incredibly unique life that many would not choose, actually. But it's my life, and it's who I am at my core, and it's who I spend hundreds of hours out figuring out what I want and what's most important and designing it. And Tina designed and built our home. My wife did. She's a total just an incredible lady that she worked with the designers and the architects and all the contractors, and we have this incredible house that. It's just magnificent. And they're going to have to peel us off it someday. So we sold out in 2005 in the Cali craze and moved up here and just started a whole new adventure, really.
Well, I got to say, Tim, and thank you. I thought of this while I was listening to you. No, I believe not just myself, but a lot of people, I guess it's imprinted on us maybe when we're young. We could probably do a whole show on this as well, but a lot of us may not have a real... healthy relationship with money, or for lack of a better way to describe it. I mean, and I remember, I didn't know this, but I remember when I was very young, and even some of the Disney movies and things like that, where, you know, I'd hear people say, do you want to be rich or do you want to be happy? like there was one or the other, you know, and where the person with all the wealth was this evil, mean, lonely guy on top of the hill, and all the real happy, spiritual, thoughtful people were the real poor in rags in the valley. I mean, that was just something that I would see and read about growing up and didn't realize the imprint that it had on me. But I mean, what you're saying, because I've heard you say it at least four times that I counted, is giving back and purpose and, you know, living your true self, those kind of things. So I wanted just to mention it now that, you know, earning money, which is how we trade and buy things, you know, doesn't mean that you're selfish and lonely and greedy. Is that correct?
Well, that's a tremendous point, Todd. I really appreciate you bringing that up. It's all in what you do with money. And I have met, candidly, some selfish, greedy people, and I'm sure you have too, and I'm sure everybody listening to this has. However, it's been my experience, most people who accumulate wealth want to share it and want to help others get there. And you know, they say, I think it was, I can't remember who said it back in the day, but somebody said the great ones spend the first 50 years earning it and the next 50 years giving it back. And I started a little early on the give back side, but that's where the rest of my life is. And candidly, that's what my whole life centered around now, is the way I put it is I've seen Oz and I want to take as many there with me. And what I mean by that is I found what I'm purposeful about. I found what makes me get up every single morning excited. No alarm clock. Were you kidding me? I just wake up as soon as the sun comes up and I hear the birds. I'm up with them because I love my life so much. And that's what I want for people. And that's why I think this is a good time to kind of tie into where my life went after we moved up to the mountains and things went well. Let me go one thing in between is if you met me from 2003 and 2008 and you said, "Hey Tim, what do you do?" I'd say I ski. And they say, "What do you mean you ski?" And I say, "Well, I do a little investing on the side and coach some people for how to invest in real estate and some real estate people on how to sell more real estate." But basically, I ski about 100 days a year and I mountain bike and I'm just out in the boonies all the time. And that was a period of just kind of figuring out what's next. And I didn't know why we were doing that. But around 2009, my dad passed away. Right about that time, one of my friends on a big powder day, we'd skied like 3 days in a row, and he just looked at me on a chairlift and said, "Tim, I could do this every day." And it just hit me. It slugged me in the face. I've been doing it about 8 years. I enjoy it very much. It's a major piece of me. And I just looked at him and I went, "You know, I can't." And it felt like I was eating cake for breakfast every day or something. It just didn't sit right. And I knew I had a lot more in me. I know I was also at a time when I just didn't like where we are as a society, where people aren't self-reliant and they're looking to others and looking to the government for the answers for themselves. And candidly, I was a little angry at just where our country was, where the world was, and looking outwardly for solutions. And about three things coalesced. A, I was done with skiing every day. B, my dad died, who was one of my two inspirations, and major inspirations, I should say. And C, that anger at what's going on with the world. And finally, I had, I think, another one of those mad as heck days. And I just said, "Well, why don't you do something about it? You know, you're sitting here whining that you don't like the way that people are not living fully themselves and not looking for themselves to take them to where they want to go. Why don't you do something about it?" So I started a nonprofit 2011 called One Life Fully Lived. It's a 501c3 nonprofit. I started it to honor my dad, who is a school teacher. Our motto is Dream It, Plan It, Live It. And our thought process is everybody has a dream. Precious few have a plan for their dream, and way few are actually living their dream. And my goal was to create a community centered around everybody in the community dreaming, planning, and implementing their best lives.
I love it, man. I mean, I'm listening to you, and, you know, I guess it came, like you said, you're figuring out. You say, wait a minute, what are you going to do about it? I love those things. You know, oftentimes, that's as far as we get. You know, I'll think about it tomorrow. So you, if nothing less, you've been persevering and showing up. So talk about One Life Fully Lived. I mean, what, you got the idea one day. What do you do next?
Well, first of all, I want to tell you where I got the idea. I talked about my friend Pat Hyben before, who wrote the book, and I went to the conference, or the Keller Williams family reunion. I named One Life Fully Lived after a tattoo on his leg that said One Life Fully Lived. And I just thought it was such a great name. I looked, it wasn't taken, and it fits who we are, what we're trying to do. I mean, none of us, you know, knows what's happening next. I mean, no one's getting out alive. So you better just, you know, make the best of this life and let the chips fall where they may. So we started the nonprofit. Candidly, we started it for younger people, people who are still in high school, people who are in junior college. We wanted to reach out to the C students, you know, the ones that aren't going to the four-year schools, that don't have two parents helping them, guiding them, the kind of lovable losers. It was kind of to help the Tim Rhodes back when I was 16, 17, and so lost, have a community of role models to show them what to do. So we started it for that age group, and we fell flat on our face, candidly, because I think we had the wrong model. We had the right idea with the wrong model. But the problem was, is these 16, 17-year-olds, think back to where you were. And I know for me, I wouldn't have listened to us because you've got a warm food every night, three meals. You're at home. Your bills are paid. You're in what I call the cocoon. So you really don't get what the One Life message is. And so we did a couple conferences, and they were mediocre. And then we shifted our model. What we found is the young people would come to our conference, get extra credit. They get to come for free. They'd get extra credit if they came to the conference. They'd come to one or two sessions, sneak out the back door, and get the extra credit. But the teachers and their parents and others who are out in the everyday world kind of getting their butts kicked, they loved what we had. They were in there going, I'm 47 years old and I have no idea how I'm going to retire. And my health isn't that good. And I really have no mastery of my life. Wow, these people you're bringing in, they're incredible. And Todd, what our whole, give you two other foundational pieces of our nonprofit. First of all, we have these tools. They're the real life's 101, what they should be teaching in school, but don't, candidly. And it's five things. One, who am I at my core? Do I want to work indoors, outdoors? Do I want to work with my head, my mouth, my hands? Do I want to be around people? Do I want to be by myself? Am I happy in an office? Am I happy out in nature? Who the heck am I and what makes me tick? Okay. Number two is, what's my plan for me? How am I going to get there 5 years from now? As you said, 5 years, how's my life going to be different? Okay. And then number three is offense. How am I going to make money and fend for myself? Defense is, how am I going to avoid life crippling debt and learn how to invest wisely? And finally, the fifth one, I call it EEP. Efficient, effective, productive. How am I going to get things done? How am I going to get somewhere? And those are the things those are the basic premises of what One Life Fully Lived. Those are the tools of One Life Fully Lived. And we also look at the levels of mastery. If you're familiar with, I think it was Maslow had his levels of mastery. You start off unconsciously incompetent. I don't know. I don't know anything. And then if you're wise, you realize at some point, hey, I don't know anything. And that's becoming conscious that you're incompetent. And then if you keep mastering, you become consciously competent. And if you keep going along those lines, you become unconsciously competent. It's kind of like when you drive a car, you don't realize you're turning on the blinkers to make a left-hand turn. You just do it. So those are what we're about, and I'm just very, very proud of the community we've been able to create based around those teachings.
You know, Tim, I love it. I mean, so much information, so much real practical, applicable information. I noticed when you said how the model originally was shifting towards the young, or was directed to the younger people, and it didn't seem to really work. Isn't it? It's my experience, my own personal experience, as well as working with other people, that for some reason, there needs to be that discomfort before we're able to accept other information and move in a more positive direction. You know, you said it, the kids were comfortable at home, but these 40 plus people that were teaching them were thinking, what's going on here? This is what I need. You know, isn't it? What I'm leading to is it's hard to be proactive and help people learn these tools until they're ready to receive them. Usually that's through pain and discomfort or catastrophe, correct?
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. And the word that when you were saying that came to mind is it just isn't relevant to where they are. It's like when I was 18 and my mom, and that's one of the things when I started One Life Too, our core question is, where do you see yourself in 5 years? And my mom would ask me that when I was 18 years old, and I'd say, I don't know, Mom. I'm going to be at a party this weekend, and I'm hoping to be with this girl because she sure is cute. I can tell you that far, but 5 years, are you kidding me? So when I was 18, it just wasn't relevant to where I was at the time. When I was 26 to 35, you know, in the trenches then, all this stuff was really important.
Well, good for you, too. I mean, for me, you said something about you were a late bloomer. Yeah, man, I was really a late bloomer. But I guess it's the path we each have to take. It's, in my own life, it seemed almost as my mind was broken open or cracked open. You know, some people seem to be able to receive messages, whether they're spiritual, financial, thoughts of others, a lot simpler than I did for some reason. But I guess I couldn't have done it a different way, or I would have. Same with you, correct?
Yep. Yeah, it just all happens in its own time naturally for all of us, I guess. And, you know, it brings me to when you talk about breakthroughs, we've had a few major breakthroughs in our One Life community. We give away what's called the Dream Planet Live It Award. And we gave away two back east in Philadelphia this year to two great members that have come just overcome incredible odds to create incredible lives for themselves. And what we're doing is we're creating all these models at different levels of mastery of people who, you know, go back into their own community, and 6 months later their friends all go, what in the heck's gotten into you? You're just not the same. You've lost all this weight. You've started that new career. You're just on fire. What's going on with you? And it's because they've joined a community of full life seekers that are you know, just going full out. And I just want to let your listeners know that our community, it's not political, it's not any denomination or anything. It's just my wife and I have never taken a dime from it. It's all about just people helping people live their best lives, and there's no hidden agenda. And it's turned into a really cool thing off a simple idea, and our community is just candidly growing very rapidly, and I'm really proud of what we've put together.
And I want to mention too, people, anyone listening or that's going to listen to the show, they can find out all about the foundation at onelifefullylived.org, and that's the number one, lifefullylived.org. Now, when you said years ago when you were in that conference and you thought you were all that, and the person to your right of you seemed to be doing a lot better, you know, numbers-wise, and the person to your left as well, you know, it really struck me that you didn't, you know, give up at that point. That's something that's a block for me, and I believe a lot of others, and maybe even might block people from attending conferences or seeking out other people's experiences about ways to be better versions of themselves is... Sometimes we feel less than, and when you know that. So for some reason, internally, you didn't let that stop you. Is that what was going on with you at that point? Did you have to sort all that out? Did you call somebody? What happened?
No, that's just, I don't have that. I guess I am competitive, but I don't care if somebody else is better than me. That if you're better at this, I may be better at something else where I can help you up. I more look at it rather than any kind of competition or scarcity. I come from an abundance place. And I also think, and I've always been this way, that just wasn't an issue. But another thing where we look at our community, a good analogy for the opposite of what you just said is, remember when we were kids, there was a game called A Barrel of Monkeys?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And there's like one monkey helping another monkey up, and then you're being helped up by another monkey. Can you get that visual?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right, so that's what I see things, is yes. The monkey helping me may be better at me than, let's say, spirituality. And I know more about finances. So I can pull them up financially, and they can enlighten me more spiritually. So I think we're all teachers, and we're all students, and I just never have subscribed to, back when I was the best agent in Manteca, people would tell me they're going to outsell me next year, and one even thumped me on the chest and said that, and I was like, dude, you know, go get him, man, you be number one. I didn't care if I was number one or number two, so just so I'm in the game.
Yeah, and I appreciate you sharing that. I brought that up only because maybe some of my own self-value issues, even today. Also, you know, a good mentor, a guy that taught me a lot of things. One thing he said to me years ago, and it rings so true to me today, is he said, Todd, you'll act like the people you're around the most, so choose wisely. And I believe that's what One Life Fully Lived offers as well, is that community of people that are just striving. They're seekers. They're looking for new ways to help themselves. But also at that point, just like the money thing, once we're more comfortable and secure, we have much more opportunity to bring so much value to other people. And that seems to me, that's kind of like the whole mindset of your community, One Life Fully Lived. Is that, am I on point there?
Yeah, you're exactly on point. And I also, if you remember, I talked about, I spent a lot of time out in the boonies trying to figure out who I was and stuff. And another thing happened that helped us create another entity that I'm very proud of is during that time when I was out skiing a lot, and if somebody asked me, what do you do? I said, I ski. Well, I ran into a guy named Pat Hyben and David Osborne about 2004, and Pat and David had a mastermind group going, a little two-man mastermind. And I when I met them, David was way into wealth building, Pat was way into accountability, and I was way into adventure, three A's. And we became the three amigos and started a three-man mastermind group. And then we'd go and do these adventures all day long and play really hard and then mastermind and go over our goals and go over our finances and go over our fitness level and where do we stand as humans, you know. We also developed this thing called a Life Happiness Index that had all these different matrices of what makes a special, full, balanced life. So we started doing these mastermind groups, these trips by ourselves, and then a few of our friends wanted to come with us, and it grew and grew and grew, and then we met a couple other friends who helped us put together a company called GoBundance, and that became a company literally 2 years ago, about 2.5 years after One Life Fully Lived nonprofit, and that's really blossomed also. And if you remember, I was talking about those levels of mastery. One Life Fully Lived is helping people of all levels of mastery getting somewhere. GoBundance is when you've mastered life and you're really rocking and rolling, and you want to be with a tribe of like-minded people on living on a higher level, experiencing things on a higher level, and giving back on a higher level. Because one of GoBundance's pillars, there's five of them, financial freedom, age-defying health, bucket list adventures, extreme accountability, and the fifth one is genuine contribution. And that genuine contribution piece is One Life Fully Lived, where we give back and help, you know, as a collective group, help others find their way. So that's something I'm really proud of also.
Well, thank you so much for that, Tim. And that is GoBundance, and that's at GoBundance.com. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yep, more information there.
It's super. And, you know, you keep coming back to it, and that's why I admire it. And it just, it is very admirable, and it makes me even more hungry. And we can hear it in your voice, Tim. It's not like this is some far-fetched thing. The passion you speak about and really the joy. And that's what keeps me really interested in all these things. And you keep coming back to that, and I can tell it's not written down or a pitch. It's what you
know. No, this is who I am and what I live. And it's so cool, Todd, because like today I've probably talked to 5 different people and just mentored them. And none of them I'm coaching. And it was just all different people at different levels of mastery that are either came to One Life Fully Lived and have some questions about things with their teenage son and things with their finances. And then two guys this afternoon with that may want to join us with GoBundance and stuff. And it's just really cool to I'm literally living an incredible life that I've created that's surrounded by accountability and being a part of something bigger than myself. And anybody listening to this knows this fact. When you master something by teaching it, and when you're teaching it, you have to live at that mastery level because you have to walk your talk. And one of the wonderful things about today is we live in the Google society, when if anybody has any doubt about your sincerity, all they have to do is, or your realness or whether you're authentic, is all they have to do is Google you. So I love what we've created, and you absolutely nailed it. I'm living who I am on a daily basis, and wherever I am, whether it's talking to people like I'm doing today. The last couple of days, I was actually skiing up in a place called Mount Lassen. And wherever I'm doing, I'm just playing it full out.
Tim, what a joy it's been. I mean, you have so much experience and information. The passion you talk about makes people hungry. And that, I believe, is a big piece as well, that not just a desire, but almost an attraction piece. I've never been in your presence physically, but just listening to you, you know, keeps me hungry and keeps me going. And I hear the joy, and it brings me joy knowing that we all have value if we can focus on it and then work hard, make a plan, and surround ourselves with other people that are on the same kind of path and holding us accountable. Who knows what might happen next? It might be wild. Tomorrow might just be a crazy day, you know?
That's exactly right. I look at it that way is we just don't know what's around the corner. So why not find what you like to do and do it often? And just, you know, that's one of the things about One Life Fully Lived. Go back to dream it, plan it, live it. It's that simple. And if you look at everything I talk about, the financial ABCs, I'm not a complicated guy. But what I do is I look at the little things that make my life special, and I ask that your listeners find what are those things that make your life special, and quit talking about it. Dream it. Make a plan for, you know, who am I? How am I going to get somewhere? And then write a written plan for it, and then find a community like One Life Fully Lived or GoBundance or whomever. Maybe it's your little mastermind group. But make the dream, write the plan, and find a group to hold you accountable to something that's bigger than you, and hold them accountable to something that's bigger than you also. And by doing that, you're going to get what you want out of life.
Tim, it's been awesome. You sure did provide a ton of value, a ton of wisdom to me. We'll be sorting this out in the days and weeks and maybe months and years to come. Thank you, I mean, so much for what you've been doing and what you've been bringing to your communities that you've created, as well as everybody. You know,
hey, it's been my sincere pleasure, Todd. And anybody listen, if you like what you hear, please go to onelifefullylived.org. The number onelifefullylived.org, and check out our West Coast conference coming this fall These conferences are next to nothing. They're a total give back mission. We feed free breakfast, free lunch. We give away 1,000 books. And right now it's only $100 for 2 days. And it's incredible value. So.
Oh, man. I'll tell you, that is incredible. Again, that's that One Life Fully Lived, the number one lifefullylived.org. Tim, thank you so much for being here and taking the time out. It's been a real honor and a great privilege. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Todd. You can tell I had a blast.
Excellent. Very good. Thank you, Tim.
All right. Thank you, Todd. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. There you have it, Mr. Tim Rode, One Life Fully Lived. That's the number one, lifefullylived.org. What a guy, man. He's bringing a lot of value, ton of value all over the place. And you can hear he's really having fun. He is living life. OneLifeFullyLived.org. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We really appreciate you listening to the show. Thanks so much for all our guests. We certainly can't do it without them. Then on over to TremendousLifeRadio.com. You can listen to all the archives there, as well as see all the information about all the guests we have coming up. And we have some awesome, impactful guests in line for the next couple of months. It's getting hot. It's summertime in PA, and it's getting hot. Thank you so much. You can get over to iTunes as well. Subscribe over there. That would be great if you'd subscribe or write a review. It would really help us out and to reach more people. Just go over to iTunes and search Tremendous Life Radio. Until next time, make it a great day.